This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, over 500,000 prisoners will return to society by the end of this year. Most will end up back behind bars. How to help ex-cons stay out of prison, next Talk of the Nation. Right now, a fresh look at a brief but dramatic chapter in recent American history. In 1966, in Oakland, California, Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale formed the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. They quickly attracted a following, primarily among young urban African Americans who felt that the pacifism of the civil rights movement was not an effective tactic where they lived. The Panthers organized themselves around principles of protection, economic empowerment, and self-determination. Eventually, they offered health and education programs to poor and ignored areas, but they're mostly remembered in popular culture for more militant revolutionary activities and for their rallying cry of black power. Here's founder Bobby Seale speaking at a news conference in 1968 after the death of 17-year-old Bobby Hutton. Hutton was killed in a gun battle with Oakland police.
Black people are now to organize in a fashion where we have maximum retaliation against all forms of racist police brutality and attacks.
What changes have there been in the Black Panther Party since the gunfight last weekend?
What you mean, what changes? We have a black man that's dead, murdered by pigs. That's a change.
FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover called the Black Panthers one of the biggest threats to internal security of the United States. The party formally disbanded in 1980. 20 years later, there's renewed interest in the group and an effort by some scholars to make sure that history has the entire picture of the Black Panther Party. So what is your memory of this Black Panther Party? Has it changed over time? You can give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@npr.org. Joining us now on the phone is Kathleen Cleaver. She was Party Communications Secretary for the Black Panthers from 1967 to 1971. Now on the faculty at Emory University Law School in Atlanta, Georgia. She's with us by phone from her home outside of New Haven, Connecticut. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And also with us is Yohuru Williams. He teaches history at Delaware State University. Just this past week, he co-organized a conference called the Black Panther Party in Historical Perspective, and he's with us by phone from his office. Professor, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Professor Williams, tell us a little bit about the conference. Who attended, and what was the goal?
Well, the conference had about 50 participants, and we featured about 40 papers. 16 were from fields other than history, but the vast majority were historians. And the goal of the conference was to take a fresh look at the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense and its contribution to the American social, political, economic fabric. For far too often, in looking at the Panthers, people have relied on kind of a negative portrayal of the party, which is very common in the kind of popular meta-narrative that undergirds our understanding of the 60s. What we hope to do with this conference is have professional historians look at these, you know, popular conceptions of the party and to get a fresh evaluation of what the party's contributions truly were.
Kathleen Cleaver, you lived through those days with the Black Panther Party, and it's always a little discomforting to find out that something you lived through is now being regarded as history. Nevertheless, I wanted to ask you, take us back to the beginning, and what do you think was behind the appeal of the Black Panther Party?
The appeal was primarily to young black urban youth whose parents, in many cases, had either lived in the South or had migrated from the South into urban areas. The appeal was for a attitude that said, you have to treat us as decently and as humanely and with full justice and respect and dignity. One of the popular songs of that era was Respect.
Mm-hmm.
There was a sense around the world, not just in the United States. In Africa, there were people fighting to end colonialism. In Latin America and in Mexico, there were revolutions against neoliberalism. In Vietnam, there was an independence war. We identified as young people with this upheaval and saw ourselves also fighting for self-determination, human decency, economic equality, and an end to racist violence, particularly the end to racist violence, because if you remember those days, riots and rebellions were sparked repeatedly, usually by the murder of a young, unarmed black child or black man.
And regrettably, the incidents like that are not confined to history. There are, though, a lot of questions about the Black Panther Party and its reaction to those and whether that was ultimately a productive approach, Kathleen Cleaver.
Well, the notions of police brutality and the notions of racism and the notions of community control of police all became mainstream discussions after the Black Panther Party and not necessarily before. I mean, the issue of police brutality was central to the March on Washington, but it wasn't really until after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King in 1968 that when urban rebellions consumed this nation, there were 200 within the span of about a week, that there was a Kerner Commission and that there was a look at what police were doing and how violence and police were actually provoking and encouraging this kind of behavior. We had the incident of an out-and-out murder of a Black Panther, Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, in Chicago on December 4th, 1969, that just created outrage around the country, and there was lawsuits and there was investigation. So I wouldn't want to say that that meant nothing. What I would say is that we were able to bring a lot more attention to bear on the issue. However, there was a very high cost, and the cost was essentially the level of government infiltration and targeting of our leaders and members, to the point that too many of our youth and members and leaders had to pay for this with their lives. Either they had to die or they spent many decades in prison or saw their families destroyed.
Professor Williams, there are a lot of misperceptions about the Black Panther Party. Legends grow up about a lot of organizations. Which ones particularly interest you, and which ones do you think are particularly pernicious?
Well, actually, there are three main ones about the party that seem to predominate the popular mind set. The first is, among professional historians at least, is this the Clinton model of the 1960s. And the problem with the Panthers from the perspective of that the Clinton model is that they don't fit the good, bad, you know, the good early 60s, the bad late 60s paradigm that so many people are comfortable with. That simple American morality play about the good idealistic young people of the early 60s in organizations like SNCC and SDS who somehow go astray in the late 60s. To put it bluntly, the Panthers, in the words of Carl Oglesby about SDS, really don't have that Bronze Age that they can harken back to. They began in the late 60s as armed revolutionaries on the streets, so they don't have the option, from the perspective of many historians, or are not given the opportunity to be viewed in the context of that earlier, more heroic phase. Having said this, that doesn't necessarily fit the historical record about what people who are doing and conducting research on the Panthers have discovered. My colleague, Professor Jamal Lazaro, is working on a book currently on New Bedford, Massachusetts, and my own book on New Haven, Connecticut, show that the Panthers were far more conscious about community programs and far more involved and engaged in community organizing than they're often given credit for. Our soundbite culture tends to view the Panthers within the context of armed revolution. Even the piece that you guys did to introduce the program,
sure,
having Bobby Seale comment on the murder of Bobby Hutton, was not the majority appeal of the Black Panther Party in many communities. What appealed to people about the Black Panther Party in many locales was the fact that as a national organization, they were always willing to allow local issues to predominate. In Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where you had poor ambulatory service in the African-American community, the Panthers set up a free ambulance service. In New Haven, Connecticut, they went to work protesting for welfare reform. And New Bedford, Massachusetts, they were actively engaged not just in a Breakfast for Children program, but in a free clinic. These are the types of programs that attracted people to the Panthers. Unfortunately, we've had many negative journalistic accounts like those by Kate Coleman and Hugh Pearson, and also this popular image of the Black Panther Party as a kind of reverse Ku Klux Klan that has colored the historical record. And so those are the things that we hope to address at the conference.
We're speaking with Professor Yoharu Williams and with Kathleen Cleaver about a recent conference on the history of the Black Panther Party. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Our phone number again is 800-989-8255, and let's get a call in from Dick, who joins us from Burlington, North Carolina.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Well, my comment was, my only experience with the Black Panthers was back in the 60s in Oakland, California. I was in the service then, and I had to go anywhere I wanted to go on the bus. And my experience wasn't a good one at all, because they would get on the buses and intimidate everyone on the bus. They wouldn't pay. It was, as far as I could tell, they were a bunch of thugs, and I don't see any reason to change my mind. It has nothing whatsoever to do with race.
Can I make a response to that? There were, at that time, a large number of people who were sent by the United States government and paid to be informants and infiltrators who behaved as thugs.
Baloney.
There were also people who were, in fact, thugs who pretended to be members of the Black Panther Party.
You wish that was true. That's baloney.
Our principles were serve the people, take nothing, empower the people. So the behavior that you are discussing is not the behavior of the Black Panthers, but of people who you choose to believe, and because they were posing as Black Panthers.
And may I add to that that, you know, this is the problem. This is why we were so concerned about having historians look at this. You're looking at there at an issue of memory. Here's a person's memories of a group that he perceived to be the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. There's nothing to say that the people that you encountered on that bus that day were Panthers. Kathleen Cleaver is exactly right. We need historians to bring the tools of the trade to look at how the party functioned. You know, even the government, and Kathleen Cleaver, again, is exactly right, did engage in a very systemic campaign of repression against the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. And using techniques like those she described was very common. So this question of memory as opposed to scholarship is one that has to be addressed. Otherwise, you get these kind of reminiscence of the party, which may not reflect on what the party was truly about.
Dick, I wanted to bring you back to see if you had a response to that.
Their memory is incorrect.
Well, Kathleen Cleaver was there. I mean...
Well, so was I.
Yeah, I'm not saying...
No, but you weren't in the party, and you don't know the principles of the party, and you probably couldn't give me the name of a single person who was a member of the Black Panther Party.
They didn't give me their names
exactly.
When they were intimidating
exactly.
me.
Okay, Dick. Thanks very much for the call. We do appreciate it. You talk about this perception of, you know, certainly there were government agents on any number of levels, from local police to the FBI, who were involved in penetrating the Black Panther Party. Yet there was violence. There were drugs involved later on. There are some things that the party cannot be proud of.
Well, that's true in any organization, particularly if you look at the United States Congress and how many congressmen have been charged or sent to jail for breaking the law. I mean, we don't have a perfect world and we don't have a perfect organization. But one of the things I'd like to point out is the significant thing about the Black Panther Party. At the time it started, there were less than 500 black elected officials in the entire United States. One of the things the Black Panther Party was very focused on is empowering local, ordinary black people to understand that they had a voice, that they had a role, that they could participate in the political process at their level. Our central claim, our central slogan was not black power, it was all power to the people. And we were not only empowering black people, but Asians, Chicanos, Native Americans, and had a rainbow coalition in which we operated around the country. We had a coalition with the Peace and Freedom Party. We worked with SDS. And so the political aspects and the clearly anti-racist position that the Black Panther Party took has been covered up by a lot of effort on the part of the government to demonize the organization to justify the ways in which it was destroyed.
And all of that, we're encouraging that all of that should be looked at, but another slogan was off the pig.
That's true, because the police were killing us. The police were murdering black people, and every time a murder occurred publicly, if there was any kind of investigation, the outcome was always justifiable homicide. There were no charges ever launched at that time when the Black Panther Party started against policemen for the murder of black people, and they sort of ran rampant through the community, wreaking havoc and violence and using intimidating tactics, which was one of the reasons the party was organized to patrol the police. I would like to say that at this time, there's a whole generation of young people of the same age that the Panthers were who are experiencing some of those things, but they don't have any organizations to turn to as we had. They don't see a worldwide movement to enhance justice and increase human rights, and one of the things that I have been doing in connection with other activists and scholars is producing International Black Panther Film Festival that brings to the screen films of that time and of recent times, so young people now can have an opportunity to engage and see for themselves and make their own decisions instead of accept a lot of the hostile and essentially racist characterizations that have been passed through the popular culture.
Another dimension of that, again, is...
And you have to make this very, very quick.
I will. The failure of people to appreciate the local stories that are associated with the Panthers. People focus too much on the leadership. And you might find in someone like Huey Newton all the contradictions that make the Panthers fit that declension model. In fact, if you look at the local level, which is what a lot of historians have been doing, you'll find an organization that was very welcoming communities because of the positive things it did.
We're going to have to leave it there. Yahuru Williams teaches history at Delaware State University and coordinated the Black Panther Party in Historical Perspective. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.